welcome into the CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, let me remind you once again to please do that. You can go to iTunes, CBS Sports, College Hoops, College Basketball. In the podcast section, you can subscribe there. And to everyone that has done so, hey, thank you so, so much. You know, our downloads have more than doubled from a year ago, so I want to thank all the listeners for doing that. And everyone for taking the time to say they enjoy the podcast. It's greatly appreciated. You know, continue to want your input, so feel free to email me at Matt Norlander on Twitter, and then Matt Norlander at CBSinteractive.com via email. Would love your feedback, questions, anything you want to pass along for the podcast. You know, I'd love to include your thoughts, comments, you know, hate mail, of course. Anything that you do or don't approve of, by all means, all-inclusive here, and would love to get you involved. Today's podcast is one I've wanted to do for a really long time. It's got Bill Raftery, and you know, before we get to it, I'm doing a little bit of a different thing here with the podcast and kind of setting up the guest, because Bill, he's old school. He does not have a computer, although he does have an iPad. We get to that near the end of the podcast, and I found that genuinely surprising. But he doesn't have a cell phone, doesn't have a computer, is largely old school just with his approach and the way he lives his life, which, you know, you kind of expect. You know, he's been around for a while. And I originally went up to Raftery at a UConn game. I think it was the UConn-Texas game in like the start of 2011 or something like that. And asked if he'd be willing to come on. He had no idea what a podcast was, but he was like, yeah, that's fine. Just, you know, give me a call. Here's my number. And that number didn't work. I tried it about a month later, and it was definitely not that number. So, hey, I don't blame him at all. It could have been an honest mistake, but either way, it was fine. And then I saw him again at last year's Big East, kind of got reacquainted, and basically reminded him that I'd love to have him on the podcast, told him, you know, people are just dying to hear you, man. Anything I could get to get him involved. And finally was able to arrange him to come on this past week. Now, the podcast was recorded Friday because Bill does a lot of traveling, obviously, with so many games. And he actually has a lot of obligations during the season. So there's just a few references to the fact that, you know, things coming ahead, you know, this weekend, which was referring to the past couple of days. But otherwise, it's pretty good, and I hope you enjoy. And Wednesday's podcast will have Parrish and Goodman, and we'll get back into the flow with that. But hey, enjoy Bill Raftery. I tried to go more into his stories of why he got into it. We don't really talk anything current because it's Bill Raftery. Why would you want to do that? And although his tales don't get too deep into the late night variety, you know, at some sort of bar or whatnot, I figured we'd warm it up with his first pod appearance, just kind of a how you do, nice to know you. And then I'll try and get him back on in the future. Maybe him and Billis at the same time. I can get them going. But enjoy the pod. Thank you again for listening. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday. And today we've got a first-time guest who I'm thrilled to have on. I've had people tweet at me for a good year, if not more now, to get this guy on. So finally, I was able to wrangle him. You know, we've had Pulitzer Prize winners on the podcast, esteemed national voices, even some guy named Billis who might have given me Bill's number and got me to bother him. So Bill Raftery is joining us. Bill, thank you so much for taking some time here, man. How you doing?
Well, it's nice to be here. Following Billis, though, that's embarrassing. I need to have an opportunity to set a precedent here, but following the Dookie's not easy.
Yeah, I know.
Working with him is harder.
I know. Billis is he's quite a character, and I think he's doing this intentionally to set you up. I think his intentions are not the best, but we'll make him look bad. We'll make him look bad regardless. Hey, listen, you know, I bring so many guys on the podcast, and we talk about what's happening, you know, in the moment with college hoops, and we'll get to maybe one or two quick things here in a minute, but. But more than anything, I think people wanted to kind of hear from you in a venue that's outside of what's happening currently. You know, everyone obviously loves what you do on television with color work. But you're a really good storyteller. You've got a really positive attitude about the game, and I think that's one reason why you're certainly a favorite among so many college basketball fans. But I wanted to ask you, One of the things I've always wondered is, you know, you have such an engaging personality on TV. You know, how much and how often do you get fan interaction at games? And, you know, you often joke about, you know, going out and drinking with, say, Billis and McDonough. Do fans often come up to you and say, listen, after the game, Bill, we really want to just take you out to this bar right now? Do you get that a lot? And have you ever... Go ahead.
They're the ones that have the difficulty. I'm sort of the one that wants to get back to the hotel, do a workout, and go to bed. So I don't know where you got your information from, but it's erroneous, I might add, you know. But having said that, over the years, people have just been great in the different hotels and venues that we've been. And, you know, they're always pulling for their team. And, you know, hopefully if we stay overnight, their home team wins and they're in a much better mood. But even having said that, we've been in towns where the team has lost and played well. And people and kids in general are just so enjoyable to be around because they have their opinions and insights and love of the game just as you do, only theirs is more pigeonholed into one team. So other than the provincialism and, you know, the local interest, it's been great and gratifying. So we've met some great people over the years.
Give me your three favorite towns that you've been to that you go to visit. Yeah, that's right. I'm asking you to narrow this down, Bill.
Any town that has a neon light would be a good start. So that's one. The one thing I might add, and I'm not waffling on you, is that you know, the college towns that you're in have a special vibration that I don't think you can replace. And, of course, when you're doing games in the bigger cities, there's certainly more options in terms of dining, and the wine list might be a little more extensive. But, you know, so it varies town to town. I mean, I've been in some remote spots that people say, how could you enjoy that? And I can remember years ago we used to say our favorite town was Providence. And unfortunately, we haven't been up there in recent years because, you know, they haven't been quite as good as they were way back, and people there were just great to be around, and you know, they all remembered the past pretty good of the Ernie D and Marvin Barnes days, and still hoping that is rekindled with Ed Cooley as a new coach. So it didn't really matter to us where we were. I just think it's the kind of people that make wherever you happen to be. So having said that, I didn't give you one city, but they're all pretty darn good, let's face it.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting to me is you were in the coaching game for, what, 16 years or thereabouts, right? And
I'm sorry, I missed that. I've been doing well for 16 years.
You were in the coaching game. You were head coach for 16 years, and you left in 1981 from Seton Hall. Why ultimately the decision to permanently step away from the game? And was broadcasting something that you know, really dove headfirst into, or was it something maybe closer to the late 80s, early 90s, that's when you really got comfortable with it? Can you take us, you know, back a few decades?
When I was a senior at LaSalle, Bob Wolf, who's a Hall of Fame, a Frick Award winner, he did the Larson no-hit game, amongst others. We were in the NIT, and he was doing the CBS game. And our college coach, Duty Moore, said, I want you to show Bob around for a day and a half. You know, show him the campus, get to know our team, etc. And when Bob was leaving, he said to me, you ought to try our business someday. And at that point, I thought I would be Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Oscar Robertson. And when that didn't work, I ended up coaching. I thought I'd be John Wooden. That didn't quite work. And then in the 79 season, Big East was formed, 79-80, and then 80-81 was the second year. And Dave Gavitt, who was the commissioner, the late great Dave, he was doing the color. And I said to him one day with my AD, who's a good friend, I said, you know, someday when I'm finished, I'd love to do that. And 2 years later, I think it was October 28th, 1981, we had 2 weeks of practice, and Dave called and said, if you want to do this, you've got 2 days to let me know before I have to open it up. And in 2 days, I took it and loved the team I had coming back, and They ended up 9-0 the first part of the season, obviously, and beat Houston and Notre Dame with Digger Phelps on the bench. I just don't think that's why Seton Hall won. He was on the other bench. And after that, they had a few kids ineligible. They ended up about 500. And then P.J. Cosimo got that job after Hottie had done a great job despite losing those kids. At any rate, I started without anything else. I did 9 games for the Big East Network, which was then ESPN was the outlet. And ESPN gave me 25 games besides that. And I did 3 or 4 games for NBC. And the next year I signed, I started with the New Jersey Nets for 23 years. And then CBS and ESPN the same year. And I've been with them since. So I've been really lucky, obviously. And hopefully doing a decent enough job where they've been asking me to get back. So I guess I've survived, and I think it's just a tribute to, you know, the game and the great kids who've played it and the excitement as the game has grown, both, you know, on the networks and nationally in interest.
Did you ever really regret the decision to leave in those first few years after? I mean, did the tug to coach really, you know, pull at your heartstrings, you know, whether it was 5 months, 1 year, 2 year, 5 years down the road? Because some coaches can leave the profession for good and kind of sever ties and kind of put it in the past, while others, obviously we've seen this with broadcasters all over the place. I mean, most notably, maybe most recently, Lavin, for example, was at ESPN for a good number of years.
Mark Godfrey.
Yep. What about with you?
Okay. They have to be asked, though, so I didn't have anybody asking me to come back. So, I sort of made up my mind that this is what I wanted to do, and I was going to enjoy doing it, and hopefully people would enjoy listening. So I just really, the first year, I think, is the hardest, generally speaking, for anybody who leaves, particularly in early October when everything starts. You have no place to go. I mean, it's a very tough sort of letdown or release, and I think the next year it's hard, but not quite as hard. And then after that, you're in the mode of trying to do the best you can for the viewer. And so I really never looked back, and you know, never really had any interest, and nobody else had any interest either. So that made it real easy.
Okay. You, of course, did the NBA for all those years, but you're predominantly known as a college basketball commentator. Why the gravitational pull toward the college game instead of the NBA game?
For example, in the late 80s, CBS had the NBA, and, you know, that was really exciting with the playoffs. The end of the year was, it was like a brand new season, and we were lucky to have it at that time. And so I always enjoyed it, and I try not to compare them because I think they both bring something. I honestly think the difficulty doing NBA in college is something suffers, and it's usually preparation, I think, for the college game. I can sit home for days now and look at 3 or 4 of their games and enjoy it and sort of sop up all the information that so many of the talented analysts and play-by-play guys do throw at you on a nightly basis. So I think that part was made it a little bit easier. I wasn't totally exhausted. I mean, I did 3 and 4 red eyes a year in the old days. Do a game on Big Monday, get a plane and do a San Francisco Warrior game, and then red-eye back to do a Big East game someplace. So that made it really hard. So I think just travel became difficult. Just making the games was a problem. And now as I reflect back, and I think about 6 years now, 7 years, and, it's a much more relaxing way to go over, as I will today, watch Temple and Duke practice. So, you know everything about these kids other than to brush up a little on what the coaches might give you. So that makes it a lot easier.
I want to ask you. You've got, you know, your handful of sayings that you drop into a basketball game. Is this the first podcast you've ever done, Bill? I'm guessing it is, right?
Now, as Jay would tell you, I'm computer illiterate. So if I've done it, I don't know what it would be like. So I'm sure I've been on certain things with either ESPN or CBS where they've asked me to do stuff. And, you know, you just do it and don't really pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I'll say yes for you. How's that?
There we go. All right. But you know, from man to man to onions, cilantro on the deck, to little kiss or whatnot, I want to know what your muse is for these. You know, if you can recall a first time where you came up with it, whether it was in the passion and heat of a game where it just kind of blurted out, or, you know, if it was at 1 a.m. in the morning with some friends as you bellied up to a cake and something came. I mean, how does this, how do you do it? And then also, how do you kind of, you're able to pull this off without making it too sticky, you know what I'm saying? Because certainly some announcers can have a go-to here or there, and maybe it's because you've got a wide variety and they come at different spots. It doesn't,
You're very kind. Let me tell you, you're kind.
Listen,
I wish my wife thought, to me this nicely. But no, what happened was when I started in identifying the opponent's defense, it was really to get out of the play-by-play man's way. And I had no idea that I tied the words together man-to-man. There was no separation. And I didn't realize until traveling where somebody would say, "Amen," and I would go, "Oh my God, that guy's nuts! What the hell's wrong with him?" And basically, I was doing it not knowing it, and that's what I would say about everything else that I've done. They just blurted out at a time, and how in some ways I feel like it's mandatory to say a couple of them. And I hope I'm not boring the the listener with it, but the one onions came. Kevin Edwards, and this is Ian Eagle, who's one of our partners.
He's great.
CBS announcer, great kid, so great person, and he's the one. He's got a great memory, and the Nets at the time weren't doing that well. And Kevin Edwards made a jumper in the corner, I believe a three, to beat the Heat in Miami, and he claims that's when I first said it. And that just blurted out. And, you know, it's a nice way in reflecting to sort of crystallize the moment as succinctly as possible and describe how tough this kid is to be able to reach back and make that jumper or that layup or that free throw or that play. And I mean, they just sort of come and, you know, they have no, particularly when there's nothing in here, they've got an empty barrel, so I'm concerned about what might pop out. But thus far, it's been on the up and up anyhow.
I wanted to follow up with you. The Wall Street Journal did a fantastic story on you almost 2 years ago now. And I'm going to, for those listening, if you're listening on iTunes, if you want to go to CBSSports.com where the actual podcast is posted there, I'll have this linked. But Matthew Futterman, I hope I'm getting that last name right, did a nice story on you.
Yeah.
And he included a shot of your handwritten prep notes that you have on yellow legal pad paper. And I mean, the stuff is and I say this endearingly, I mean, it's almost like it's got the detail that a serial killer would envy, and how much information is on these pieces of paper as you prep for a game. I wanted to know if you've done that since the beginning, and you did that out of some sort of nervous obligation that you had to, you know, do as much work as possible to be as prepared, or is this something that you've grown into? Do you still do it? And where is your research material for all this incredible information? Are you just taking media guides here? Because obviously I know you're not firing up the web to get your info here, Bill.
No, I watch tape, basically, and I actually have an iPad now, believe it or not. So
I will not believe that, but okay.
In this second generation, I'm going to whip it out this year for I don't think I whipped it out in Maui. I'm saving it for one of the big Monday games. See if I can shake McDonough and build us up a little bit. But no, I still do the same thing. I don't exactly recall when it started, but for when I coached, I did the same type of thing in preparing for practice. And not as detailed in terms of personnel and things that they happen to run. And I guess what I try and do in watching the tape, we've only got a few moments to describe a play and to go from the beginning of it to the end of it. First of all, time doesn't permit it, and would probably put the listener to sleep. So a lot of the diagrams are basically like the quick hitter end of a play. And how it gets to that point is sometimes interesting as well. So occasionally, if it's the past that leads to the past, that I've got to see that, then maybe even the basket. So some of it is for me. Some of it is for, obviously, all of it's for the listener, if whatever I use. But a lot of it's for the truck, that giving guys some ideas of what we might be able to show. But I think the biggest thing, it's almost like anybody who studies for an exam, and you finish the exam and you say, gee, I did all that work for 3 or 4 questions, you know? So I think what you do is you try and overdo it. And then if it fits in the broadcast, to insert it. And I think that's sort of what's developed over the years. It's not brain surgery. And if it were, I'd be out of work, I think. But it's just an enjoyable way of going in. And, you know, I'm sure we've all had a test where we weren't as well prepared. And you're afraid of the unknown, and invariably may have gotten a poor grade. So I just want to make sure I've given these two teams as best a shot as I could to sort of characterize what they are and what their players are, and in some ways what their coaches are, or their philosophies anyhow, and try and get that on the air whenever it fits.
I can't let you get away without asking why you, Billis, and Sean McDonough work so well as a team. You've no doubt been asked this, by casual people or on the air or in interviews in the past. But to me, it's a troika, a trio that comes off extremely well on TV because you guys basically, in plain words, aren't afraid to bust each other's balls and do it frequently. And that kind of rapport on television often with commentators can kind of come off as a little forced or a little staged. But you guys really, you bring out the knives here and there, and we'll certainly go after each other in a way where it's genuine and maybe baked in just a little bit of truth with some of the things you throw around. So is there any way to explain or describe how that chemistry has come together so well? And is this a dynamic that was really evident from the first time you guys did a call together? And do you remember what your first game was as a trio? What year, what game that actually began?
I don't know which game, but it was Maui, and it was good 8 or 9 years ago, I guess.
Okay.
So, and it happened because Jay was doing sideline. He was over there doing sideline, and Sean and I are saying, what a waste, so I believe we got the producer to open up his mic. And anyhow, next thing you know, they decided put him together. Dan Steer was our producer at the time, and I think Dan's the one that said, those 3 networks sound okay, let's give them a shot. And I think the biggest thing is that we all care for one another. It's developed into a very good friendship. I'm speaking for myself. They may not agree, but, there's a caring for one another, and there's no ego involved. It's like just trying to do the best you can to make this an enjoyable 2 hours for the viewer. And as part of it, maybe it is taking a shot here or there. And ultimately, Jay and I know the last word is going to be from the graduate of the Harvard of Western New York, Syracuse, Mr. McDonough, who's great with the shots and jabs and counterpunches. So, he sort of sets the table and gets the thing going pretty much, or opens himself up for shots from us.
What upcoming games do you have here, Bill? You've got Duke Temple on Saturday, right? And then after
right,
that,
I got a few days off, and then West Virginia, Michigan. And then during the holidays, I've got Connecticut, University of Washington. And then we start, then the cookie sort of gets rolling. So we'll be back together. I think it's the 7th, it might be, of January. I haven't really checked that far ahead, but I think that's the date anyhow.
Hey, great stuff. Hey, listen, thank you so much for coming on.
All right, great.
Yeah, and
I appreciate it. And sorry, we had a little mix-up phone line.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, that's not a big deal. I appreciate it. Maybe, you know, sometime a few months down the road, I'll get you and Billis on at the same time, and I'll just kind of sit back and just you guys can just trade shots at each other for 25 minutes. I think that's what the listeners.
All right, that's the deal. Well, have a great holiday now. We'll look forward to seeing you too.
I'll see you down the road soon, Bill. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
All right. And there you have it. That is Bill Raftery for you. I wanted to have one little postscript note here. The reason why I'm talking now sounds different than what it did during Raftery's conversation is since he's on a landline, there's just a different kind of connection. Normally I do podcast Skype to Skype, so it's clear and the vocal levels are consistent. I tweaked it as much as I could, and I wasn't, you know, that's his voice when he's not on TV. He's just got a little bit of a lower murmur to him. So if he was difficult to listen to here or there, apologies on that. But I thought that was pretty great that he was willing to come on, considering it was probably truly his first podcast ever, and he's already forgotten that he's even done it. But anyway, thank you again for listening, and we'll be back on Wednesday. Again, feel free to tweet at me, at Matt Norlander. Send me an email, matt.norlander@cbsinteractive.com. Apologies about that. Wednesday we will have Goodman and Parrish, so look forward to that. Enjoy the next couple of days until then.